Support for this public radio podcast comes from Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals and institutions reach their long-term financial goals. 1-888-VANGUARD.
Good afternoon. I'm Adam Ragusea, and it's time for you to ask the mayor. Bloomington Mayor Mark Kruzan is here in the studio with us to answer your questions about city issues of concern to you. The local number to call to speak with Mayor Kruzan over the course of the next half hour is 855-0811. There's a toll-free number that you can call, too. It's 877-285-9348. You can also send an email to mayor@indiana.edu. In these last few shows that we've done with Mayor Kruzan, we've gotten a lot of calls and emails towards the tail end of the show. I would encourage folks to, if they've got questions, go ahead and send those in or call them in as soon as possible so we can get as many folks in as we can. Mayor Kruzan, thank you so much for taking the time to join us so close to the holiday.
Absolutely. Thank you, and happy Thanksgiving to everyone.
Absolutely.
I just stuck around because I like to drive around and find parking any place
right, exactly.
And be thankful.
Do Stormy and Echo have any special dietary expectations around this time of year?
Well, they always have special dietary expectations. It's a matter of whether I deliver or not. And yes, they get their very own turkey basted rawhide, and
nice.
They're looking forward to it. And seriously, if you've never tried it, don't knock it till you have.
let's move on to talking a little bit about the election. Obviously, congratulations on your victory.
By the way, Stormy and Echo are dogs.
Yes, exactly.
Let's make that clear. Anybody out there who doesn't know that, I don't want people to think I've got
they're not your less
small
favorite
children
siblings,
at home, right, who I'm feeding rawhides to.
Mayor Kruzan, in my interpretation, there was a fundamental and largely unspoken question at the heart of nearly all of the substantive issues that came up over the course of the mayoral campaign, and that was can Bloomington realistically expect to attract new businesses that will offer decent-paying jobs with benefits to low-skilled or semi-skilled workers, and therefore government should pull all the stops with traditional economic development to make that possible and so forth? Or are some of the people who used to work for Otis and RCA Thompson and so forth just ultimately out of luck, and therefore Bloomington needs to cut its losses and focus on quality of life, community character, avenues that will pursue perhaps the city's future as what could euphemistically be called a boutique community? Does that jive with your impressions at all?
Where does that come from? Is that an emailer or is that yours?
No, that's me.
Okay. I would disagree with the premise. You pose it as an either or, and I would never say that people are out of luck because we're focusing on quality of life issues. I mean, I think it's the exact opposite, that it's a community that's thriving because we're focusing on economic development as synonymous with quality of life. I think it's part of the entire theme of the campaign was whether or not I think came down to is that a valid question or not? Is it an either or? And I think people spoke pretty clearly that they don't believe it has to be an either or, that you have to tend to both the quality of life in Bloomington as its economic development driver. An awful lot of people who – and you mentioned specific companies, Otis and others. Obviously, part of our economic development – and I mean our, meaning the communities, not just mine or the cities, but it's something we've been very supportive of with – and I'll mention all the groups here – Ivy Tech, the state's workforce, one, BEDC, the Chamber of Commerce, especially its Franklin Initiative, SCORE, the retired executives group. All of these with the university and others working and I should also mention MCCSC in terms of worker training programs and workforce development and making sure that there's lifelong learning is becomes a pretty common practice. But ultimately, keeping the community one in which people want to locate their business, have their own workforce live, that people choose to open their own small businesses here is what we, I think, as Democrats ran on as a theme throughout the election, is that it shouldn't be juxtaposed that, well, if you're focusing on small – I think you referenced boutique businesses. Obviously, I think that adds to the – the character of the downtown, and it's all the unique businesses that are located there that make it kind of a crazy quilt pattern of as opposed to some kind of a generic downtown. And the same is true throughout the community. It's the diversity in the community that people are attracted to. The fact that Bloomington's not like other places makes it a place that people choose to live, work, and visit. And that's, I think, helping our economy tremendously. Obviously, the manufacturing sector jobs are dwindling. That doesn't mean, though, that we don't want to focus on new manufacturing. And I think that's exactly what the community is doing. And so you start to see
– with Cook Pharmica providing the model, right?
There's one model, but it's not just life sciences. I mean, Schulte Corporation, others in town. That's why through BEDC and the city and as well as county government, we've been going monthly visits to traditional industries, new industries in town. There's still a lot of industrial-based employment here and that are bringing high wages to people. So I guess I would just disagree with the entire premise of the question, but I do think that that was the basis of the election, was people posing that question. And I think you had two mayoral candidates who that was kind of the debate hot topic, was our perspective on the overall direction of the community.
I've got one more question stemming from the election that I want to be sure to get to. But for the time being, we've got Ben on the line. Ben, you're on the air with the mayor.
Hello, Mayor Prejean. Thank
Greetings.
You for taking my question. I have two quick questions concerning bicycle pedestrian transportation. The first concerns zebras, for example, on Pete Ellis Drive and on Jordan. And is there anything that can be done to educate drivers that I believe they're supposed to stop for pedestrians and cyclists crossing there? Secondly,
Can we start with the first question here, Ben?
Sure thing, okay. Of course.
Sure. In terms of we are going to be doing a lot more, and we're working with the university now on crosswalks. We don't do a particularly great job, I don't think, of and I noticed this even throughout the election season and through my 4 years as mayor. We do an awful lot of discussion about vehicles and parking and all, and I think we do well and we work on it. And we're doing better. We aren't doing great on bicycles, but I think more people are talking about it. Sometimes I do think it's pedestrian traffic is what sort of gets short shrift. And so we have started to address that in ways that that were a little bit more pronounced, and that was in terms of school crossings. And with the city, many people think that the school system hires and runs the entire crossing guard system, but that's actually paid for by the city. We're starting to do more and better signalized pedestrian crossings. We're working with the university to do a model pedestrian crossway on Indiana right near Dunmeadow. And we're going to start to look at highly trafficked areas and start to put in more things like that. We're also, and I think Adam will be mentioning a little bit later maybe, the grants that we're seeking. It's pretty significant grants. And part of it to me is motorist awareness of what the laws are and of where the crosswalks are. And that's also true of human nature is, you know, pedestrians are – follow the course of least resistance and what's easiest to cross and where to cross. I'm guilty of it myself. And I think if you really advertise it and make sure that it's enforced and well-marked, it will encourage people to respect that both from the vehicular point of view as well as the pedestrian point of view. So I think those are both good examples you've given of places where we can do better.
Ben, you've got a follow-up?
Yeah, thank you very much. The second question has to do with the bicycle path, which crosses the bypass just south of the railroad track on, you know, on 10th. Mm-hmm. And of course, you take your life into your hands every time you cross that.
I know that well, Ben, by
which
the way.
Which one is that? I'm sorry.
Crosses the bypass. There's a dedicated bike path that heads over to the west side of town.
Okay, sure.
It's an old to the east side of town.
To the east side of town.
Coming from the east to go, you can go west across the bypass.
Yeah, it parallels the railroad track there.
Got it. Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say my understanding was that there were plans when the bypass is widened to do something, either an underpass or an overpass. And if that's true, still it's been several years. And as I said, you do literally take your life into your hands when you cross there.
Yes, you
do. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's a good point, and you're right. It's literally years. I think it goes back at least just 5, probably closer to 10 years. Discussions. There was an overpass that was planned, and as far as I'm concerned, is still in the plans of the bypass expansion. But the university strongly opposed those from an aesthetic point of view. And if you put yourself in the mind of the overpass that's out further on the bypass, closer to 37, past North Kinzer Pike, there is a very ugly overpass there. And that's what the university was concerned about having right there at what will soon be almost the middle of their campus when we have all that development north of the bypass. They, in turn, had contacted the state, and we were told the state has taken that overpass out of its plan. What we're now trying to do is, and we just met with the state last week, I believe, along with the Bicycle Pedestrian Commission in town, and the university, Bloomington Transit, and others working on trying to improve pedestrian and bicycle passageways across that expanded bypass, which I think people will be surprised at how wide that new bypass is going to be. That's a lot of concrete, a lot of asphalt. And so we're looking at an underpass in one location, better pedestrian marking on another. So we're looking at two crosswalks. I personally am nervous about underpasses just because I think of it at night and I think it's out of the public view. It just makes me a little concerned, even if it's lighted well or lit well or whatever the right.
It also sounds like a more engineering intensive solution to the problem.
I will say the one thing the university has made that I think is a convincing argument is that the engineering of the overpass is to remain ADA compliant is pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. I mean the amount of space that has to extend beyond the actual bypass borders is pretty tremendous. It is a big structure.
To get a ramp at the right gradient.
Exactly. Right? And it is an amazingly large structure. It would be even bigger than the one that I've described out there north of Kinzer. So I think there are ways to do it. We're working together with the university, Bloomington Transit, on bus passes along 10th, bus stops along 10th Street, the Bicycle Pedestrian Commission, and I believe everybody knows that it's dangerous and we need to get – I just preferred the one at 10th Street just because that's where I think you find people – well, I think that's where the predominant number of people are crossing. That's where all the residential is. It's where people walk up. So we're going to have to do something to make crossing closer to 9th or 7th or 14th Street be more desirable in order to encourage people to use those kind of crossovers or cross-unders.
Well, thanks very much for the question, Ben.
Yeah, there's a lot happening on that right now.
Let's move on a little bit again to back to the election. I've got a question that's perhaps the – having to answer it is perhaps the price of being the victor. Can you name one criticism that your opponent brought up over the course of the campaign that you thought was valid and that you will take with you into your next term?
Oh, I can name more than one.
All right, let's have it.
You know, I'm not going to give them all to you. The election's over. No, I think there is certainly valid criticisms in any election and – I think – well, in the microscope of the election, you know, sometimes things get a little bit exaggerated. One criticism that David talked about was the Beeline Trail and the Certified Tech Park. I suppose those were the two that were talked about the most. I think in part – what struck me was just a lack of understanding, and at least on one of those issues, on the Beeline Trail. And I misunderstood what the position that David was taking was. I will say for weeks, and I know this is a little embarrassing almost, but we debated here in this studio, and then it was again on the WTIU studio, and it clicked. I think it was there that, he is talking about spending city money up front and not waiting for this grant money to come in. Now, that's a criticism. It's a valid criticism. It's a debatable point, but I certainly didn't waver on that in terms of believing that for the millions of dollars involved that we need to be trying to seek grant monies. Now, when it comes to – and in this studio, the question was asked, well, when it comes to phases beyond phase one, there are three phases to the trail. I think I'd done a bad job of describing my commitment to the trail in the long run, that absolutely, if we have to rely on city funding and we can make it work within our budget, that's what we'll do. This is an important economic development project for the city. And so better communication on that particular issue. And then that's a broader example of – and I think we'll start to see that pretty soon at some of these city council meetings where I'll be giving updates and describing issues.
That feeds into an email that we've got here from Bob. It says, can you update us on the certified tech park and can you explain the city's role in its development and speak about what you personally can do to get it off the ground?
Yeah, the city's role was to initiate it in partnership with the university. You have to have a higher education institution has to be your, I'll call, host. And so IU did that for us, and we really appreciated the fact that the Daniels administration, when they came in, they very easily could have brushed ours aside. Our application was filed during the current administration, and it was the first and really the only new certified tech park that was actually received certification after the Daniels administration came in. And there again, there's another example where there's been more happening, and what has been happening has been trying to create space for the park itself. We're working with the university on the 11 acres that it plans to either sell or lease at 99-year term. I meet with President McRobbie the first or second week of December to talk about that. We've been working with a developer at the 11th and Morton that in his new plan, there's about just under, I think it's about 38,000, so I'll say 40,000 square feet of tech park related space that will be available. We're working with a developer that this will be very controversial, I think, in this coming Wednesday, a week from today at the city council meeting, where we've got a developer who wants to build condominiums right across from the tech park. And I very much want to encourage owner-occupied space right there so that people can have that live-work opportunity.
But the chief criticism that Councilman Sabag seemed to keep bringing up had to do with the collection and use of the tax revenue from what is essentially a TIF district that is the tech park. And he seemed to feel as though there was simply just a lack of leadership in terms of getting that ball rolling.
I didn't hear that so much. I missed it. If that were,
he said it to me. Yeah,
yeah, I missed it. No, I think it. I think what his line on that was that it should be more than a place on a map, and a lot more has been happening on that. Where things did get slowed down has been with a change in leadership at the university, and I think the university's focus is clear. Well, I knew it was going to be happening, and it has passed now. It has come to pass. Is that the university's interest in that 11 acres is not to develop it as a technology park. It's to either sell it all off or to lease it at 99-year lease. And our job now is to work with developers to try to make sure that at least a portion of that is developed as tech park-related space. The university's interest is clearly north of the bypass, and that's where you're going to see their life sciences and technology-based initiatives. And I think there's room for both, and I think we can have the incubator space still be up by – off of North Showers. The concern in terms of tax revenue is one that did come up during the council hearings. I didn't really hear it so much during the election, but I did hear it during the council hearings. From David, and that is it simply comes down to the fact that the employers have to self-report that. And when Ron Walker, who's now the BEDC CEO, when he worked as the economic development director for the city, he went to those businesses. Brian Kleber, when he was at the Small Business Development Center, worked with the employers. But that's a state law. It's a requirement that they have to file. We can't file it on their behalf. And you can encourage people to self-report, but ultimately it is self-reporting. So you know, we'll continue to do that. I think we'll – with the change in leadership at the same time at IU, at the city when Ron moved to BEDC, with Linda Williamson leaving BEDC, later Brian Kleber, you know, that definitely has slowed things in terms of advancing in a very public way certified tech park. But there has been activity there, and then we've met with the state, talked to them about some ways in which they can help address that, mm-hmm. the issue. And I think you'll start to see an awful lot more happening there, even both in terms of policy, but also in terms of the physical manifestations of a tech park in that part of town.
Well, I know the community is eager to see it. We've got just under 10 minutes left in the show. I want to remind our listeners that we're speaking with Bloomington Mayor Mark Cruzan here in the studio, and we've got a lot of questions here to go and not much time to get to them, so we should probably try to keep our discussion on each of these points a little bit more limited. Here's a question pertaining to the Beeline Trail. It says, Mr. Mayor, what are the chances that the Beeline will be elevated over Patterson and Dodds and First Street as well? If it's not, the path will not be a useful bike corridor, but rather an attractive nuisance.
Well, that's interesting. I'd have to take a look at the exact section that's being talked about, and this and the caller or writer or whatever is certainly more than welcome to come in. You can look mm-hmm. online at the city and go to the Parks and Recreation Department and look at the plan. But we've got detailed plans the entire length of both phase 1, 2, and 3, all three phases. And I'd have to take a look at that. I apologize for not knowing more detail on what
it's an interesting question,
their idea
yeah.
is.
Here's an email from Tori. It says, hello, my name is Tori. My husband Sam and I own a house on West 14th Street in the Maple Heights area. The neighborhood has had several thefts and even one episode of arson over the past several months that were reported to the police. These include petty theft of rocking chairs off of a porch to stealing a car and a refrigerator. They also dumped the compressor fluid all over the yard, which is great for the environment. We do have an email list of people in the neighborhood, and we tell each other when there has been another theft. What else do you think could be done to help stop this crime in our neighborhood? These crimes have historically been happening in the early morning hours.
Well, what I'd like to do, if I can either get it from you, Adam, sure. afterward, or if you can just either email me at mayor@bloomington.in.gov, or you can call my office at 349-3406. And what I'd like to do is come over, have the city come over. It'll probably be Vicki Provine, who works with Housing and Neighborhood Development, and perhaps Scott Oldham or someone else from Bloomington Police Department. They work with Neighborhood Watch Program. We can, if that's not been established there, we can get that done. But I'd like to come in and learn more about specific problems. We can look up statistics of calls that we've made there and can start to kind of aggressively address that. And so I hope that you – I don't mean to put the onus on you, but if you can make the initial contact so I know who we can contact, or we can just contact Maple Heights neighbors, and I'd like to – really would like to pursue that. So if you could do that today or Monday, mayor@bloomington.in.gov or 349-3406.
It is interesting that there has been certainly the perception of increased crime in the community over the last year, and there's a little bit of data in the FBI Uniform Crime Report to substantiate that, at least for 2006. I'm wondering if you have the same feeling and what your conversations with the police department have been.
I think they pursue they perceive violent crime as being down, and a lot of other as you talk about the FBI statistics, other kinds of crimes going up. But it depends. I mean, you'll find you've seen coverage in the paper and in your station on the counterfeit money. I mean, all of a sudden mm-hmm. there's many reports of it, and you end up with pockets of problems. The police department, I think. One feels that the staff increases that we've implemented have been needed, and we do have a relatively low, and I mean that literally, a relatively low per capita police to citizen ratio compared to other cities in the state of Indiana, and so that's something we've been trying to balance. I don't think you can do you can I think you can handle some of it by just adding police, but then I think also in terms of public awareness, the neighborhood watch programs, things like that, that it really has to almost be a community-wide sort of a team effort. And obviously there's increased stress in the community. That's why things like the development of the community and the pace of development, the growth of town. That's why I think people, even when they talk about the I-69 issue and others, it's just the pace of a community and the stresses that it adds certainly, in my mind, are reflected in those kind of crime statistics as well. And a large part of this is why workforce development and providing opportunities for people is key to just an overall sort of a social balance, and why it's all these topics are interrelated.
We've got just 3 minutes left in the show here, Mr. Mayor, and I've got 2 points I want to be sure that we can hit with you. One, and we said this before in the show, is that you haven't yet been able to see the list of the possible sites for the new post office compiled by the Great Lakes Facilities Office. What are you expecting to see there?
I have to tell you, I don't have very high expectations. Yeah. I'm sorry to say, I don't think that the post office, postal service, received a very big number and a very wide array of proposals. And I'm not going to be shocked if they start talking about looking at having to open up to proposals from outside the downtown area. And what we'll try to do is counter with trying to rustle up some locations of our own, but I need to see what they have now to understand if I'm accurate. I just had that sense from our initial conversations with them that they didn't get what they would have liked to have seen. And if that's the case, there's two options. One is to reopen it and to work at continuing a downtown initiative, which is what I plan to pursue, or to go beyond the downtown and start looking probably southwest of town, which I think would be unfortunate. So,
right. Well, we'll have a look at it when it comes up. Just with about the minute and a half left in the show that we have here, the city received a $250,000 grant for sidewalk improvements near school. Tell us about it.
And I really want to thank the staff and the Templeton parents, teachers, administration, the MCCSC, and everyone else who was involved with that, the Safe Schools Safe Routes to Schools people, and it's a $250,000 grant that has been awarded, and we will use that to put a sidewalk in, I want to say, between Hillside and
Henderson, right?
West side of Henderson, okay. As well as a crosswalk, a pedestrian way there, a median. And I think we'll add an awful lot to the safety of kids and anyone walking around that Templeton school area.
Why was that spot targeted?
Mainly because of the Safe Routes to Schools program and the initiative from the Templeton parents and the school itself, that we're seeing increased traffic there and, unfortunately, increased speeds, and we're doing what we can with that as well. As you know, the intersection was signalized, and it didn't always used to be that way, and widened. And it's, I think, going to be a model for other areas that are developing similarly.
Well, we've got 60 seconds left, Mr. Mayor. Anything else you'd like to bring up while you've got the community's ear?
No, I appreciate the opportunity, and I just want to say I am very appreciative of the support that I received on Election Day. I know all candidates are appreciative of the support they received from all their volunteers and voters. And I do. I want to say happy Thanksgiving. I want to say to your listeners, to you, and hope that anyone who might be out there who might not be having a particularly good holiday season will be able to take stock and think of things that they are grateful for in the past and start looking forward to what might be out there in the future and just have a very happy Thanksgiving.
Well, the same to you, Mr. Mayor, and to all of our listeners. This has been Ask the Mayor with Bloomington Mayor Mark Cruzan. Thanks for all your calls and emails. Join us again November the 28th. We'll be speaking with Kokomo Mayor Matt McKillop for, I believe, the last time. For producer Will Murphy and engineer John Shelton, I'm Adam Ragusea. Thanks so much for listening.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Acura, featuring the TL Type S with a 286-horsepower V6 and real-time traffic alerts. Learn more at Acura.com.